girlfriend Amy Gu.
Hello.
Sitting in for girlfriend Kathy O'Malley. I'm Judy Markey. And as I mentioned to Lou, I'd like to really kick this off with your reactions, if you are a Trump supporter, to what has happened in the last 24 hours. The Washington Post dropped this video from 2005. It's 3 minutes long, a little over that, in which Donald Trump cops to having tried to get involved with Nancy O'Donnell, and he said he failed at it. He also said he could get anything he wanted from a woman. He just grabbed them at the crotch, and they used the P word instead of
crotch. Yeah, he did not say crotch, right.
Right. It rhymes with wussy. and on and on and on. And in order to, Amy and I are both pretty opinionated about this, and I think most of you know that we are not Trump supporters, but I thought this morning, and we were talking about it before the show, we should talk to people who are still with him and ask you why, and just to get enlightened, as well as those of you who said, that's it, I can't be doing this anymore. It seems like, you know, this is the time to walk. And we have several calls coming in, and of course you can text us also at 312-981-7200. Let's talk to Candace. Hi, Candace.
Hey, Candace.
Good morning, ladies.
Hi.
It doesn't really matter to me what somebody said in the locker room, especially 12 years ago. What matters to me is policy. Policy that affects my family, my ability to pay my mortgage, illegal immigration when we are a welfare state, which will bankrupt the nation. These are the things that matter to me, not what somebody said.
Okay. And is your issue immigration or is it also abortion?
Oh, no, there's several. I'm not a single issue voter. Only stupid people are. So there are several different policies, but main policy is economy. So, you know, that being said, I could care less what somebody said in a locker room. I mean, men are crude, especially 12 years ago.
Well, he wasn't in a locker room.
Police came along.
He wasn't in a locker room.
It doesn't matter where he was. You know,
don't yell.
We want to make space to have the conversation. We really do want. We're posing this on a show where we usually do not talk about politics. We usually give people a break from it. We're doing this because we want to make space for the conversation.
Sure. And it's such an immediate. You know, it just happened.
It's actually not something
years.
That's immediate. This is typical leftist hysteria. Okay.
Okay.
And we
okay.
go through this at every single election. These are the things that don't matter to people, but yet you guys throw it in the face.
Wait a minute,
at every single
hey, Candace, we're trying to have a conversation.
Let's ratchet it down.
You're
and
making accusations
be civil.
And really being very emotional about
no,
this. We're trying
I just,
to have a conversation.
No, I'm not making accusations. I'm pointing out the obvious. There are so many other things that are relevant to people's lives and their ability to pay for their bills and go to work every day. This is not one of them, but yet you make it relevant.
You using me, Amy and Judy, you make it relevant?
No, you are bringing it up like it's a story. It's not a story.
It's the front page
you are
of every, it's the front page of the Drudge Report
how
as
about,
well.
How about a story be that Hillary, this week, Obama had to drop a case
okay, we're getting
a
into
Libyan
Candace.
Arms dealer. Why don't you talk about that?
We're getting into an argument, and that's what we wanted to avoid. And so we're going to talk to Carmela and let you go, and glad you had a chance to air how you feel. You obviously feel very passionately. Thank you for your call.
Indeed. Hi, Carmela.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi, you're on WGN.
Hi. Yes, I agree with everything the former caller just said. It's the choice between one world order and America. It's the choice between Hillary, who has killed, she's got a kill list of 47 of her own close associates there, and she killed our ambassador, and she's arming Libya. She's arming the ISIS people. She created that with Obama. How can any goofy comment he made 10 years ago be relevant to today to begin with? And it's just a comment. Men are crude and rude when they talk to each other. That's normality. At least he's straight and he's not gay. At least we know we got a straight guy.
All right.
So there's no way that comment would influence anything. There's so many issues, our economy and immigration. If you want to be run by Muslims and you want to be a sex slave to Muslims, Hillary's going to bring in 450,000.
Okay, Carmela, we don't have to yell. We're being really polite. Please don't yell.
We're trying to facilitate conversation around
all
this.
All the points that are so much more relevant than any crude comment. We'll leave it at that, okay?
Okay, thanks for the call, Carmela. You know what's interesting is there's
Carmela's interesting.
Well, yes. I just think it's, we're talking about, like, a lot of people are saying, like, locker room talk and men are that way. I disagree. I think men and women both, like, when we're with our girlfriends or when we're with our trusted friends, we talk about sexual things. But what that comment is about consent.
I asked my husband this morning, I said, do you hear people talking like that? I mean, you've been a man for 64 years, you know, tell me. He said, you know, not past the age of, when you're in your 20s.
Right.
He said, no, I don't know men that talk like that.
Right, because this is about a conversation about consent. You know,
of course.
This is about power and consent. That's why it's not about just like a boy. Why like a boys will be boys thing doesn't work for me on this one.
I know, but we promise to be open and listen.
Yeah.
And just don't yell at us, Robert. We
really do want to just talk about this and facilitate conversation. I mean, we've said many times, like, the reason sides don't talk is because we both, like, just kind of hurl facts across the aisle at each other and don't hear each other. And so we're trying to make space to have conversation. But to do that, we have to do it respectfully. If we're yelling and, you know, we're not trying to convince a vote here.
You're going to vote for who you want to vote for. And to me, I am interested in the reasoning whether you're with him or not with him, and you were with him. So this is Robert. He's calling, and you're still with Donald Trump, right?
Hi, Robert.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
And?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go forward and say why you're still with him after hearing what he said.
Well, that's nothing compared with Hillary. I mean, you know, it's like going to socialism or Republic in the United States. I mean, you don't go with somebody that's like Hillary and everything like that. She's all for socialism and Bernie Sanders, all like that and everything. And I mean, I'm going to keep America free. I mean, it's about as simple as that. I mean, they're drumming up something. The Democratic Party is drumming up stuff that's 10 or 11 years ago.
Okay.
I mean, that's pretty desperate, you know, and everything. I mean, I'm out here. I see road signs. I see the Trump, Pence. I don't see anything in here. Maybe one out of 100 I'll see for Hillary. I'm a truck driver, go across this country, back roads, everything else, and you just hardly ever see a Hillary sign.
All right.
You know, it's all Trump, you know. So, mm-hmm. I mean, they look at the conventions, you know, the things they have there. I mean, you got a couple hundred of Hillary's conventions, you got a couple thousand at, you know, at Trump's conventions. I mean, that alone out there will tell everybody, you know, that Trump's going to win. I mean, it's easy to see out here.
And where are you calling from, Robert?
I'm in Illinois getting ready to go into Iowa. I'm a truck driver.
Uh-huh. Okay. You're right. All right. Well, so, I'm learning from these.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Thank you, Robert. I'm definitely learning that we are entrenched.
It is now.
Entrenched in this two America view of stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of passion about this particular election
from both sides. And I think I hope anyway that we could all agree that we're seeing two very different countries. We're attached to two very different narratives, and in order to get anywhere, we're going to have to find common ground. We're going to have to.
I don't know if we ever will. From our first three calls, I don't know how we find a middle ground, because I think we disagree so intensely, but nonetheless,
again, Robert, thank you for that call and for the tone of it. That's what we're going for here, is a respectful tone where we are respecting one another's views and just having a conversation.
This is Lorraine.
Hey, Lorraine, you're on WGN.
Yeah. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
I'm just going to say, okay, yeah. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
I just wanted to say three words: blue dress cigar. Okay. And that's about it.
Okay.
Both men are fathers of daughters. I think
fame and money sort of goes with the braggadocio part of their personality. And neither one of them are in any position to be throwing stones at the other. That's about it.
I think that's true. That's probably true. I think it tomorrow night, it probably will be difficult for Donald Trump to bring up what the cigar blue dress thing, given what's happened today. Yeah. But we shall see. I mean, it's going to be must watch TV. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
Lorraine, thanks for listening.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for the conversation, too.
And this is Jim.
Hi, Jim. You're on WGN.
Good morning, ladies. It's nice to hear you.
Thank you. Yeah, where are you?
I'm in Wisconsin.
All right.
No. On the spectrum.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. I am kind of waffling back and forth between Trump and Hillary because as a country, we have to realize within a short period of time, one of those two people are going to become president of the United States.
That's true.
And I'm just thinking that, you know, all this, you know, I know Mr. Trump has his fault. Hillary has his fault.
Her fault.
But we got to look beyond that and say, okay, what is the core of each candidate? Just like we did with Barack Obama.
And what do you think is the core of each one? Jim.
Well, I think the core of Trump is to put America back together again, because we are our external bolts that hold us together as a country are loose.
Okay.
And I think
what's her core?
Hillary's core is more of education, keeping the economic stream going as fast as possible, because we are in a little bit of a slump. And I think she has the ability or the core value to make the economic core of the United States better as the European market is trying to pull us down. I think that's where she's going to go.
Okay. You going to watch the debate?
No, I do not. I don't, because I think that will change my my own view. And I just want to be...
Take the risk. Come on, Jim.
Isn't that what the debate's for? Are you supposed to challenge us?
Yeah. When I'm standing in the voting booth, I want me there. I don't want a television program and a moderator.
Okay.
That's reasonable.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here and then come back to your calls. Okay. Take care, Jim. Bye-bye. Amy Guth and Judy Markey, we're talking to people who can keep it civil about how they feel after the remarks from Donald Trump were released last night. We were particularly soliciting people who stayed on with Trump and are not bothered, is what we're kind of gathering from the comments that were made, and or people who've decided maybe to leave. And so far, actually, nobody has said that they're ready to leave. This is Lisa on line 3. Hi, Lisa. Welcome to WGN.
Good morning.
Hi.
My opinion on this is just that his remarks is, you know, take away the crass nature of them. I think they're a predictor of what could come. You know, if he was married at the time and he was trying to seduce a woman who was also married, you know, he had no
Have you been a Trump supporter?
Those relationships.
No. Oh, okay, because we were really looking. Thank you for your opinion, because, I mean, we share your point of view. But we were really looking for people who have moved in the past 24 hours or people who feel resolutely like they want to support him. Kathy and Amy and I were talking about our points of view on this because we've tried to withhold them. And this is Kathy, who is still, we're going to give airtime to them. But you go ahead. This is Kathy. Hi.
Hey, hi, Kathy.
Hi, ladies. I still support Trump.
Okay.
I'm a college-educated white woman. And the reason I still support him is because I believe in his policies, and I don't believe in Hillary's policies.
Well, that's as good a reason as any I can imagine. I think that's exactly where we really ought to be in this discussion.
Well, And I feel that what he said was unfortunate, and I feel that, you know, it being caught on a hot mic and on tape or whatever is unfortunate, because those situations have happened to Obama, to Hillary, to Bill Clinton. I mean, Dean, what was the guy that ran for president, that Dean guy? I mean, that happens. It's unfortunate, and it can be offensive. But as a voter, I have to look at the policies.
Well,
I think
that's a good reason. I think that's as good a reason as you could announce why you're still there. And I hope you feel we've been fair.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I don't always feel that WGN is fair. They're kind of lopsided. But you know what? I have to applaud you for having this conversation today and allowing people that do support Trump to say why we still support him. And
okay. Thanks, Kathy.
I
don't mean to cut you off. We're just running up against a time wall. Thank you very much. We'll be back.
My heart's beating about as fast as that that drum.
So we opened with a half hour without arguing with anybody, and both of us feel we have learned, as we said, that this is a country very much of two minds and passion pretty much on both sides. We purposely didn't take anybody who was a Hillary supporter, except I believe it was Lisa who called in. And Amy, wasn't that, I mean, I felt I learned something from that.
Yeah.
Which the intransigence is what I was trying to say of people. I'm sure I look intransigent regarding this particular election, which is why you better register and vote. Just thought I'd put that in there after marching around Arizona for a week trying to get people to vote. And where are you on that preceding half hour?
My blood pressure is back to normal. It's all good.
Mine isn't
yet.
I'm still very shaky.
Well, you know what? I got to say, like, I think we were really trying to have a conversation. I felt a little attacked by the first two callers, but that happens. That's okay. Mm-hmm. You know what I thought was interesting? One instance, but by and large, the callers were respectful, and that's what we were aiming at. That's what we wanted to do, because we want to learn from each other. That's what we're all here to do, you guys, all of us, on every topic, right? I thought it was interesting that this came up from a caller, but this is kind of in the popular narrative in the last 24 hours, too, on this news cycle about this story about Trump and his remarks. Immediately, the comparison went to Bill Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but he's not running for office right
That's
now.
That's exactly true. But I think for people who support Donald Trump, that's irrelevant. I think you can dismiss something on either side as being irrelevant. Well, that doesn't matter. She was married to him. She was an enabler. That's where they go with that.
Right.
Or frequently.
Yeah.
And
the truth is, none of us know the inside of any marriage.
I don't,
you know, we can hypothesize about Trump and Melania and fine. We can hypothesize about Bill and Hillary. That's fine. But we don't actually know. We don't know mm-hmm. what deals people have in their lives. We don't know what makes up a marriage, for better or worse.
Or any coupleship.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't know.
Right.
And we can't speculate on it. We shouldn't.
No. And so we're going to change topics.
Yes, but it's a bit of a relevant one. It's like it's a segue. And that topic is about healing, really coming back from a fallout with a friend as an adult. I would love to hear from someone who's done this, because a lot of times I think what we do as adults when we have a disagreement with a friend, and this seems like this is coming up a lot in an election year, is we just go, screw it, I'm done. And we walk away from good friendships, because we don't want to necessarily mend them. Whereas with family, we might walk away, but sometimes circumstances will like force our hand to eventually mend the fence with our relative or whatever.
This just happened to me yesterday.
Really?
Uh-huh. And without getting into it, I mean, somebody was very, very angry with me, and I was stunned at the... I should preface this by saying everything's okay now. We actually mm-hmm. made it through the hardest part. But at the beginning of our conversation yesterday, when I was speaking to this person, I said, you know, when you said you wanted to sever everything, I said, well, damn you, I'm still going to your funeral anyway.
I'll show you.
Right. I'll get the last word in. And of course, this person is younger than me, and I will probably precede this person into the wherever one goes. But you mean healing after...
After some kind of fall, exactly like that. Because I think if we're not related to someone, or they're not maybe our next door neighbor, if we don't have to, I'm doing air quotes on have to, if there's not a convenient reason to heal the friendship, to heal the rift, sometimes we don't do it. And I think we're quick to walk away from friendships and treat them a little bit disposably.
Okay, so I want to ask you, what sort of version of this has happened in your world? Or it could be the world of reading something. I don't really know, yeah. But which prompted this in your head? Because it's such a chewy one.
Yeah, it is a chewy one. I like that chewy. It happened to me too. I had a little bit of an issue with a friend, and we talked it out, and it wasn't easy. It took a couple of conversations, and it took they weren't easy conversations, but we worked it out, and we agreed at the end of the at the beginning of the conversation, we agreed, look, we do care about each other, we're good friends, this is ridiculous, we need to honor our differences here and figure out a way to honor our friendship and keep it going rather than just be like, screw it. Okay. Bye. And be done. And I think I started thinking about other times when that's come up in my life. And I'm not a big, quarreler anyway. I tend to just kind of joke about something as soon as it happens to just kind of call it out and deflate it. But I was reflecting on another friendship years ago in which we just kind of gave up on each other rather than wade through it. And that was years ago.
Do you regret that? Or not at this point, because you've been without the relationship for so long?
Yeah, not at this point, because I think it was kind of a tell that, maybe we were both kind of right. maybe we were both right and we're better off without that friendship. But the friendship that just recently was put to the test, I've been thinking a lot about it because, then things are a little tender when you come back after an argument.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's...
How long did it last?
Oh, a couple of weeks. And I wouldn't say it's totally done. It's just, we're like in an eggshell place now where she and I are still, we are working on it. We're figuring it out. But like the constant texting that we used to do is not quite returned.
No, but you had a shared goal.
Yeah.
Of mending.
Right. And I think that made the difference, I think.
Right. Let's talk to Mary.
Hi, Mary. You're on WGN.
Hi.
Hi. So what's your story, Mary?
Oh, I had an experience where in conversation, the person just walked out and they were in a restaurant.
Walked out on you?
Yeah. And based on, she didn't like something I said.
Uh-huh.
And followed her, I did, and said, well, I don't think this is worth just saying, bye-bye and ending a friendship. And I'm sorry if what I said, I didn't realize it was going to get you so upset. So...
But, that's one of those apologies where, we do it often, but it's like, I'm sorry, you're so upset, as opposed to saying, I'm sorry. She didn't want to hear anything.
She didn't want to hear
okay,
it.
But all right.
I just wanted to mention, as this was so unique, I was at a Rosh Hashanah service,
mm-hmm.
and it came up in part of the prayer. I don't know the connection exactly about apologizing. And it's the person, the rabbi said, three times, if you apologize to this person three times, and after that, if they won't accept it, then you have to accept that. And I looked at my other friend who was there, and we were like, oh, my, how did they know I was there? Because I've done it twice. I have apologized twice.
Okay, but what I was saying was, if your apology was, I'm sorry that offended you, it's not apologizing for having said it. It's putting the burden on the person who was offended. Whereas if your third apology, which would really be the first, is I'm sorry I said it.
If you are, you may not be, which is fine, which is fair.
No, because I didn't intend it for it to come off that way. I was voicing my thought about something. And they took it as, I'm telling you not to do this.
So what do you think the future is of your friendship?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
What do you think the future is for your friendship?
Do
you think you're going to be able to mend it?
I feel like she is going to that she's not going to continue the friendship, but because another person heard about it and said, this, you know, the person who I'm having this thing with didn't mention she walked out on me. You know, she didn't say
that. She didn't get the whole story, and now this third part.
No, so I feel like she's kind of upset about how she reacted, you know? So I don't know. We'll see, because I know I'm going to see her again.
At Yom Kippur?
Oh, no, not there. No, at social things.
Uh-huh.
You know, because she's friends on the other side of a friend of mine.
Does that make a room uncomfortable for you? It would for me.
A bit, only I'm... See, I did not get... I didn't feel like I did such a terrible thing.
Okay, I understand that.
I'm the kind of person who would have reeled. Like, oh, no, look what I said. So I never felt like I did such a terrible thing.
Yeah.
And that we shouldn't end our friendships over something.
Well, you know what they say? You can't... She can't change... You can't change her behavior. You can only, you know, change how you react to it. And if the only option for you is to walk... appears to be to walk.
I know, and you know, I've learned in my life, so it's so easy to do that.
Okay.
You know?
And that's what we're talking about, whether you walk and dispose of it.
You
know. And Mary, thank you for the call.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome, and thank you for, love your show.
And Happy New Year. And so I would say, in terms of that, do you think, Amy, that in these kinds of instances that... it'd be 50-50 on how, whether or not you could heal. I mean, have you ever talked to somebody else who you weren't in a situation like this, but you know somebody else who lost a friendship? And also, do you think the younger a person is, the more readily they'll feel something is disposable, which is such a loaded question.
I think that is true. I think the younger,
I do too.
Yeah, I think the older I get, the more valuable good friends are. But I've always kind of been one of those like quality over quantity people with friends anyway. Mm-hmm. I'd rather have a couple of really close friends than...
So you'll have a small funeral instead of a large one. I relate everything to death and funerals. I don't know if you've known that about me.
I'm hoping Michigan Avenue shuts down for that procession. I'm going big on my funeral. Here's hoping, God willing. But okay, what was the first part of the question? I just remember the second part.
The first part was, do you think it's like 50-50? From what your experience of talking to other friends who've said, I can't believe that we're not talking to each other, or I'm never going to talk to her again, or... And if this happens with men, I'm kind of curious about that.
I'm curious about that, too, because it doesn't seem like it does. It seems... I feel like, anyway, and this is... I don't like to deal in absolutes, and this seems like a little bit of a generalization.
It is.
But I feel like I see more men just going like, hey, man, that wasn't cool. You're right. My bad. And they're done. Done. Whereas women are like, I haven't spoken to her in 27 years. Why? I don't remember. But like, I feel like that it tends to go that way more, and that's unfortunate. If that's real, I kind of envy men in that regard. I would love to be
no
able
kidding.
To like, shut up, man.
Blow
All right, fine. Let's go get a drink. All right, bye.
Okay, we're moving on.
right.
So. Our number is 312-981-7200, and we're talking about friendships that have ruptured. And whether or not you've just walked from the friendship or you've worked at healing it, and you could have been on either side of, I want to heal it, or you could have been the person that just said,
I'm out.
Yeah, I'm walking. Not worth it to me. 312-981-7200. Here's another option.
Or I feel like this year during an election, it's so interesting because I think there are people that are just going, okay, let's just agree to not talk until December 1st.
Oh, I definitely
think there's
think
some
that's...
of that too. There's people that are like muting each other on Facebook just until the election. Oh,
yeah, I know.
Time to be alive, friends.
Yeah, it's not a bad time to be alive, though. I feel sorry, just referring back to our first conversation, for the kids. And one of our calls that we didn't have time for was for first time voters who are faced with this as their first election. So we will be back shortly, and give us a call, 312-981-7200.
Friends
swapping lives of lives and loves. We're talking about when your friendship gets ruptured by a certain comment or whatever. Do you try and mend it, or do you say irretrievable, I'm just gonna walk? Jane's here.
Hi Jane, you're on WGN.
Thank you. Hi girls. Yes, it was funny that you even mentioned the subject today because I was thinking about it. And I thought, oh, I wish I could call in Kathy and Judy and talk to them about
it. We got Amy and Judy, Amy was the one thinking about it. So
Amy
where's your situation?
Great.
Thank you.
She is really, really great when, you know, she substitutes. But this situation, I've known this person for 48 years, and I think she runs hot and cold.
On you?
It wasn't that I think on some people, most people.
Oh, okay.
You know, friendships.
Mm-hmm.
And so what has happened is that, you know, maybe I won't see her for a long time. But, you know, 48 years is a long time to have a friendship. And you just don't want to give it up.
Right.
So what happens basically is that she'll get sort of like almost mean.
Mm-hmm.
And then I sort of pull away and then I don't see her for a while. And then she comes back and she's very nice.
Where are you now?
This is right now.
Are you in a pull away?
Well, she pulled away 6 weeks ago. Never heard from her. We went out for lunch. We had a great time. We went shopping. And then all of a sudden, never heard from her again.
How many times have you tried to reach her?
This time, I have not. Sort of at the end. Yeah. It's sort of at the end because after almost 50 years, you know, and it goes back and forth, you know.
Okay, so this is my question. It goes back to funerals. If she dies, will you go to her funeral?
Oh, yes, yes.
Then you don't want it to end that way. Like, you know, live your life, you know, so you haven't gone back to her. And maybe that's part of the rhythm of your friendship that, you know, she's used to. Do you generally put out the hand first?
Yes, yes, I usually do.
See, you're operating with different behavior. She's probably confused about you.
Right. And have you talked to her about that? Have you said, you know, I'm always the one mending here, and sometimes quite mean.
No, I don't. We don't talk about it. What we do is I pull away, and then she won't have anything to do with me for, it depends. It could be 3-4 years.
Oh, my God.
6 months. Yeah.
Are you factoring that into 48 years of on? And those 3-4 years?
It's really like 62 years, but just 48 total.
Active, right?
I know. But, you know, she's a very nice, really, when she's
good.
She
is very,
she's
very,
very
good.
Nice, very thoughtful, very helpful, will do anything for you at any time of day or night.
Okay, I think you're friends with a woman who has a problem. I'm serious. I don't know.
I
think that kind of hot and cold, I mean, that is, I'm sure unconsciously, but I think that that's probably somewhat manipulative and she's got some kind of story going on in her head. But if you've put in 48 years and in your head you're going to the funeral, I think you should make the call. And discuss
it. I've always done it. Always.
Yeah.
Even
so what do you have to lose by doing it again?
Because after a while, like any relationship, when you have to keep putting that effort in, knowing that eventually it's just going to wind up back where you are today.
Mm-hmm.
You go, do I have the energy at this age?
How old are you? We always say at this age, and then you turn out to be 51.
72.
Oh, that's my age. Yeah. Do you have the energy?
Yes.
I don't know. If you're going to the funeral, I mean, that just seems like the tell-all to me.
Because one thing, if you're like, I'm done. I'm not going to the funeral. We're done here. But if you're going to the
funeral. No, I would go. Or if she were sick or anything like that and she needed me, I would be there.
And would she be there if you were sick?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
See, there you are. You've got a basic bond.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because we wouldn't have done it for 40 years. But I just feel that at this point in the game, I'm just going to leave it go and not try to bring it back into life again.
Okay.
You know.
All right.
So.
Not following our advice, which is fabulous free advice. I don't understand this. But, you know, Jane, I'm real glad you called. Good luck.
Oh, thank you.
Okay,
and
we wish you the best.
Great to hear you guys on the air again. I miss you horribly.
Thank you. Well, we're not going away.
No, good.
Okay. All right. We're not
all right, bye-bye.
Bye, okay, bye-bye. We're going to talk about,
Who sings this song?
I don't know. Bob delved deep into the archives for this one. What year was this? Do you know? Have any idea? Let's see. It sounds very...
It's a peppy little 80s
50,
pop tune.
Oh, it sounds like sort of the end of the 50s to me, but I don't relate to 80s music. So what brought this up was something I saw in an advice column where a woman wrote in regarding the journals of her husband. And he had passed away, and she didn't know whether to look at the journals, whether to pass them directly to the children. And apparently there were quite a few of these journals. I didn't know men did much of this, but, you know, why not, I suppose.
Sure.
And
that's a good one.
I threw my diary out, which I kept well. I didn't keep writing in it. I wrote in it until my 20s. First of all, I couldn't read my writing anymore. It was so small. And secondly, I was such, from the fourth grade on, I thought about such trivia and ranched about such trivia that I would be embarrassed for my children to see that.
Right.
And so I trashed it. But I don't know, you've been a journal keeper for, you said...
My whole life. As soon as I could write, I got one as a gift for my birthday, and I still journal. I journal to this day, and I
every day.
No, not every day, but I aim for every day. My parents, when they downsized and retired for the first time, they've retired a few times, but the first time they downsized and retired, they mailed all of these journals to me, and I saw little locks on them and all these stickers and all these things, and I broke the locks open and read them. I was howling. They were so funny. And
from
so
when you were little.
Little. Yeah. Like all, grade school especially is funny. But then high school was so dramatic. Oh my God.
I know.
Oh my God. High school was just like painful to read because I was like, oh my God, you're so tortured over nothing. Nothing.
I think that was what really, I mean, my high school sense of torture carried on through my 20s, you know, till I was like 24, 25.
Sure.
So I really feel that, you know, this, the when journaling became big, what was this, about 7 years ago? I mean, they were just catching up to you, or 12 years ago, whenever it was that, you know, journaling was the thing to be doing. I wonder if any of you are still journaling. I wonder if and journaling became a verb then. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I just thought, a person who writes in a diary is a diarist, but as a person who writes in a journal isn't a journalist.
No, that's a good point.
Well, that was a stupid thought. See, I would have put that right in my journal, and then like been, what were you thinking about? You're supposed to be doing a radio show, for crying out loud. So if you've got if you're continuing to journal, what you want done with your journals? Do you want your kids to read them? Do you want your spouse to read them? What do you want to get rid of them now that I'm making you think about it? I mean, Amy, what do you want to happen to your journals?
Well, I've thought about that. I had a discussion with a friend of mine who was working on his master's thesis at the time, and who was looking at the journals of this person. He was, you know, this historical figure. And we had this discussion about, is it possible to have a purely, Are you writing with the knowledge that one day they will be read by not destroying them?
Ooh.
Right. And then
by whom?
Right. By whom? And then is it possible to write it without some degree of, you know,
self-consciousness that way?
Right. Self-consciousness, or even manipulation is too strong a word, but maybe some spin a little bit because you want to put yourself in a good light.
They're going to think I'm so smart.
Right. And after that conversation, I'll write in my journal sometimes, like, God forbid if this is my last day on earth, what I just wrote is going to sound completely batty. However, you know, like, I'll say that sometimes. For me, what was interesting looking back over old journals, especially when I was little, was attitudes that I had as I was figuring things out, as I was, you know, for example, I had this babysitter that used to smuggle boys into the house when my parents were gone, and what my perception of what they were doing versus what they were actually doing was very
funny.
What was
your, wait, our number is 312-981-7200. Now we'll get to the sex part of what Amy was thinking. 312-981-7200. Come call about your journals and what you want done with them. But what do you mean? You thought they were just checkers?
Well, I would write things like, I knew they were kissing, but I was unclear of, like, they kiss weird, like they're licking each other's faces. That's weird. And he must have been really warm because he took his shirt off. That's weird. It's cold outside. And then my parents came, like, the movie was sold out and they came home early one night and caught them. And I said, Diary, do you want to know what my dad said? And I you know, write in all caps, but I misspelled all the swear words that my dad said because I didn't really know them. It was just funny. And then there was, you know, an issue of a kid in my school who later came out of the closet and even then was kind of mentioning things. And I was so, like, I was pretty on board with that. I was like, that's cool. You like who you like. That's cool. I mean, even when I was like, second grade, you know, even then when we weren't having conversations really about sexuality and
gender identification.
Yeah, we weren't doing that at all then. But nonetheless, I was like, that's cool. I think he's got a crush on that kid. Okay, that's fine. I was really on board with that. And even the way I talked about, like, death and some, like, big issues, that was interesting to see myself at 8 or 10 or even younger wrestle with things like that when I lost.
Do you remember what you lost your...
Well, I lost my aunt when I was about 5 or 6, and I wrote about that, and I was describing the room, and I was so grateful to my dad for not treating me like a baby and for sitting down and telling me what happened.
Mm-hmm.
When, gosh, everyone else is talking to me like a baby, my dad just told me the truth. And that was, like, such a, you know, poignant thing, the way I described that, and being grateful for truth even so little.
Okay, so here's a personal question.
Yeah.
Do you have a fairly decent relationship with your father if he's still alive?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay. Have you ever told him that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you have? Good.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay, well, our number is 312-981-7200. I know you are former journalers, or you may be current journalers.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, give us a call and tell us, you know, where your journals are, if you've ignored them, or if you're still cool with them, or and what do you want done with them? Thank you. This is Amy Guth and me, Judy Markey, and we're talking about journaling and where you want your journals to go. And we're talking to a gentleman right now, and this is John, who does journals.
Oh, hi, John.
Thanks for the compliment. So I told the screener that I've been keeping a journal, a log of everything. Business, personal, all that stuff for about 40 years. Used to do it in, like, my Franklin planner.
In your what?
In my Franklin planner.
Oh, sure,
like a day timer.
Yeah.
Okay. And those things are a little passe. And for the last probably 10 years, I've been using a Moleskine book that I buy at Barnes & Noble. And I fill about 3-4 of those up a year. And they're all sitting on the shelf. And you know, I hope nobody looks at them while I'm still breathing, but...
Well, how do you feel about when you go? Don't you feel even more vulnerable?
No, because I'm gone. What the heck?
I know you're gone, but if you wrote stuff that was personal, and I mean, do you... What kind... Do you live with somebody else?
Oh, yeah. I'm a newlywed. I've only been married 43 years.
Okay. So, and does your wife keep a journal?
No.
No. And would you be perfectly fine with your wife reading everything that's in these?
Yeah. After I'm gone, you know, they're not in an obvious place. Nobody's going to go snooping around my office and read into them. But, I mean, I've got everything in there for business stuff, good things, bad things. I've got, you know, like if I'm mad at my wife about something, if I sit there and write about it, pretty soon I can come to grips with the fact that maybe I ought to admit that I'm wrong and do the right thing, and then I can get back to getting a gold star.
So it relieves you of your anger a lot when you're mad at your wife.
And maybe helps you make sense of things.
Yeah, which, don't get me wrong, that doesn't happen all that often.
I know, because you're newlyweds.
That's cute. Do you think that anything, if she were to read them after you're gone, do you think there's anything in that that would be hurtful to her to read?
No. Might be a little surprised about some things I thought, but...
All right.
Okay, tell us one.
Yeah. Give us the dirt.
What?
No, I'm not going to tell you one.
John, it would be such good radio.
We tried, John.
You're not. Okay.
No, we're not.
Okay, gonna. And so you say that she's not going to know where the journals are, so I'm not going to ask you.
If she went down in my office, I work from home, so if she went to my office, she would know what they are, because they're Moleskine books. So
yeah, they're beautiful. Moleskine books are beautiful.
Yeah. Nice paper, and they last a long time.
John, she's probably in your office right now listening to this going, where are those books? I'm finding them.
Okay, well, thank you for the call and for also making it absolutely definite that men do journal too. Thank you, John.
Yeah, thank you. And you have a great show, ladies. We enjoy it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay.
This is funny.
This is Anna.
Hi, Anna. You're on WGN.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Good.
Yeah.
Tell us about you and your sister and your journaling.
Well, yeah, I had a journal, and this was around the time that Oprah started journaling and started becoming famous, and so I thought, oh, I'll journal. So I journaled, and there was a boy that I liked, and my girlfriend was dating him, and I obviously had no chance of ever dating this kid. We were about 16.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote it in my journal, and my sister and friend came across my journal and started reading it. I had no idea until we got into a fight, and they had mentioned something to use it against me, this boy. I was so traumatized by the whole experience. I never wrote in my journal again. But I really want to, but there is that fear that, you know.
Wait, but that happened when you were 16?
Yeah.
Okay, and how old would you be now, these days? 44. Do you think you're safe from your sister and your best friend?
Oh, yeah, but I don't know. It's just, I guess going to that question that you're talking about, you know, would I want somebody to read it? And I don't know. I think that there's things in there I don't want people to read, but it's a release. So I would use it as a release, but maybe at some point, destroy it.
I was going to say you could burn it. You could burn it 5 years later, or make it even sooner, because you never know.
Yeah, right.
Even though you're only 44. Anna, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks, Anna.
This is Barb. And
hey, Barb.
Hi, girls.
Hi. So whose journals do you have?
I have my grandfather's diaries and my father's diaries. My grandfather's, I believe, were back from in the 40s.
Uh-huh.
And he kept a diary every day. And then my father did the same thing for many, many years.
Was it about what he did or what he was feeling? They were feeling.
Normally it was about what they did, and it always had the weather.
Uh-huh.
And
were they
the
farmers?
Temperature, the day, and what they did for the day. Yeah.
Were they farmers that they did the weather part?
No, they weren't farmers at all.
My grandmother, I saw my grandmother's journals, and they were like, played bridge with Mrs. Feigenbaum, had dinner, served dinner. She didn't serve it. She had someone serving it. You know, roast beef, green peas, and potatoes. She pretty much had the same thing all the time. But she I asked her about it. She didn't want to repeat it. And if ever there was a discussion in the family about when something happened, she would go right to her journal. And she would know, but she could prove it. Really?
Yeah, definitely. And what's neat about it for me is that I can look back. My grandfather lived in New Hampshire, and so I didn't see him very often because I live in Indiana. And we would go there like once a year when I was a kid to see them. And so now to look at those diaries and to read about when I came to visit them.
Oh, that's sweet.
And it's so cool, to, you know, him to talk about me.
Oh, right.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So how many pounds of journals would you reckon you had?
How many?
Yeah. I mean, you must have a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've probably got... Some of the books have more than 1 year. Some of them are five-year diaries. So I don't know. I've got maybe 20, 30 diaries of my dad's and my grandfather's.
Wow.
And they just mean the world to me.
That's great. I'm glad you have them.
That's cool.
Yeah, me too.
Okay.
I love you girls. You're great.
Thank you, Barb.
Thanks, Barb.
Thank you.
And we'll take one more call. This is Jeff.
Hey, Jeff. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi. We don't have a lot of time, so tell us.
Another male who kept a journal, okay. And I was advised to do so.
By whom?
I had admired some political figures who kept journals.
Uh-huh.
And regret in later years that I did not, because I've led a political life and have had a lot of great stories and occurrences to write about. But I stopped journaling because I started in my 20s.
Uh-huh.
But after I got married, my wife read through the journals.
Unbeknownst to you.
I had them. Pardon?
You didn't know she was going to be doing that.
No, I had no idea.
Ooh.
And, of course, it had notes on all my prior relationships and dating and all that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
And much of the discovery that you had mentioned with regard to your own thoughts about relationships and developing the way that you think and look at those things.
Mm-hmm.
So she removed the pages that she didn't care for.
Ooh. Are you still married to her?
I am.
Wow, that's a big issue to overcome.
Yeah.
Hello?
I was surprised. I didn't mind because I was happily married then, and I'm happily married now.
Have you stopped journaling?
It didn't bother me. The bad side was that I stopped journaling, and after my career took me into places and a lot of back rooms and a lot of good discussions, I think of all the books that I could write, but I couldn't recreate all of the events and the details that I would want to without a journal.
Well, you know what? Turn it into fiction.
Yep.
It'll be fine. Jeff, thank you for the call.
Fill in the blanks there.
Right. Thanks for the call.
I enjoyed the discussion very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
So long. Amy Guth, Judy Markey, we're here holding down the last half hour of the show. And what happened yesterday was... In the taxi, were you headed in that direction?
No, it was today. It was this morning. I had, on my way here, my taxi driver was, I said, hi, how are you this morning? And he was teary. His cat had just died, and he was all upset about it. And so we had this really sweet conversation about like lost pets. It was so sad. Because I, you know,
did you start
hard.
Crying? Well, you lost your cat within what, the last 2 years?
Yeah, it was about 2 years ago. Oh, the great Chairman Meow. He was my good buddy. You know, when I found him on the side of the road, he was just days old. He was so tiny, and I fed him with an eyedropper. So I felt like
I had a
stake in that kid's whole life, right? It was very hard. And I mean, the grief kind of dragged on. And I was even like, gosh, I'm still like in mourning over this pet. But I was on the air the night after it happened. I had my night show on, and I had planned one thing, and I got on the air, and I said, guys, I can't be dishonest to you, my listeners. I can't do it. I can't pretend. I can't be something I'm not. Let's talk about pets. This is what happened, and I told them about my cat, and we filled up the entire show with listeners calling and talking about pets, some pets that had been gone for decades, but that still had like a special little place in their hearts. I thought that was so sweet.
Now, do you ever dream about Chairman Meow?
All the time, especially right after he first died. I used to wake up feeling like he had just jumped on my feet, like he just jumped on the bed, you know, because he did for so long, for so many years. Absolutely. I've had dreams about him, and or he'll just show up in a dream. It'll be a dream about something totally unrelated, and he'll just walk through or walk across my keyboard or something in the dream, like he did in his life. But isn't it funny, right? How our pets just, you know, they're part of the family. They sometimes I think pets are better than people, right? Because they're
well, they can't talk. They can't talk back. They can't talk back. They can act back.
And they let you know, but it's like it's such a genuine reaction, you know. And you can be having a cruddy day. You can be yoga pants, no makeup, and feeling crappy, and they're still gonna curl up next to you and snuggle and love and be sweet. So sometimes, they can't talk back, but they can sure shred your papers or chew your shoes or whatever to act back. For sure.
Well, I've never owned a cat, but do you think that they tend to be more mischievous than dogs? I mean,
no.
We once did a segment on dogs, you know, who ate bras and who ate, I don't know, mouse traps or whatever hell that was. They didn't really, but
my mom's dog ate a light bulb one time.
Yeah, they're like, what are you doing? Highly dumb sometimes with what they go. And of course, then there's the old kind. I read about this recently, the dogs that eat other dogs' poop or their own.
Oh, God.
When it gets frozen.
Gross.
Was one of my dog's favorite treats. But, you know,
gross.
I think it is traumatizing. And, you know, I had a day this week. It was real rainy. I think it was maybe Thursday, and I didn't have a lot going on. I had a book going on, and so I stayed home with my book, and there's one couch that Toby's allowed on, and I was planted on that couch with him at my feet all day, and I felt like it was just the coziest of days. You know, it was a perfect day for a pet. I gave him a bone, you know. I did, you know, it was all like...
And he probably loved that, to have you there.
It was my kind of chicken soup because I don't cook.
Yeah.
You know. Here's bone. We're going to read a book. And we're just going to kind of stay up here and, you know, I'll do some laundry so I can feel productive. But that was it. But I think you grieve your pets certainly for 6 months or whatever.
Oh,
and
definitely.
I have Willie, the dog before Toby. I have his ashes next to my bed. In a little, I don't know if that's weird or not, but in a little round ceramic thing.
I've got Chairman Meow's ashes on my bookshelf. Yeah, with a little, I don't know where I got it. I got it as a gift. Someone gave me a little, like a little ring that had a little cat on it, and I have it kind of set on the top. It looks like a little genie bottle, and I have that kind of sitting on the top because it looks like him on the little ring. It's tough. It's so hard, and people ask me all the time, are you going to get another cat? I'm like,
Is that because you? I was going to ask you. So, is that because you don't want to go through the loss, or your life is so hectic that you don't?
Right now, I don't know that I'm home enough to have another pet. But I think for the first year, I felt like I'd be like cheating on him to get another cat. But you know, I not too long ago heard about a hospice program for senior animals that Paws Chicago runs. I think I could do that. So it's not about the loss. I'm confident that I could give end of life care and, you know, let a little sweet creature depart the earth in a loving environment. I know that I could do that.
Kathy has adopted a 10-year-old dog, and it's a senior dog. It's not an ailing dog, but it's going to be ailing more quickly than where should he have gotten a younger
puppy.
One.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
Right. So you're going to be the hospice?
I don't know. I would do that. I would consider it. I would definitely consider that. I don't know that I would do it every week. You know, that would be hard to do, but I would consider that for sure.
So the protection is you aren't as invested in this cat when he or she meets his
maybe.
Or her demise.
I don't know that I got another 15 years to give to a creature right now, because I don't know what I'm doing next year. You know, at this point, I don't know. I think.
Well, the older you get, the fewer 15 years you're going to.
Well, there's that
there's
too.
There's the math
there's
situation.
That too. There's absolutely that. Right. My parents have these two giant crazy dogs that they got as puppies, and you know, I mean, yeah, there's practical considerations there of like, well, where are these dogs going?
Well, do you know what I mean? This was terrible of Tom, because he generally is never terrible. But he, when I said I'm going to do a pause thing, we're just going to foster a dog, and he said, "I know when we foster a dog, we are going to have a dog." It's like when you go to look at a house. I know you want to buy that house, and you have. So I think you shouldn't do that. I want to do it. It's only for 2 weeks. Blah, 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 blah. And he says, Jude, you're 63 years old. That's when I was 63.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I thought, are you counting the years till I croak? I mean,
right.
Yes, people in my family die early, but really, I feel quite healthy. And I look at Toby now, and he hasn't slowed down that much. He's just gotten a little whiter.
How old is he?
Nine.
All right. Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't always get senior food.
Sure.
I don't want him to think of himself as a senior at all. This is Diane.
Hi, Diane. You're on WGN.
Hi. I love your topic. Love listening to the program.
Thank you.
When we put the last animal down, a dog, we had put down two cats and two dogs, I just couldn't bear doing it again. I just couldn't. But after about 5 years of not having a pet, I thought, you know, I want something alive in the house. So I thought maybe it's
gerbil. Think of a plant?
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought, well, maybe a bird. And about 3 weeks after I thought about that, we found a little cockatiel next to my neighbor's front yard, and we rescued him. And then about a year later, we rescued another cockatiel. And they bring so much joy to us, although they're very, very messy. But they're sweet, and we love them.
Well, I don't understand about birds, because you take it out of the cage. Can you take your cockatiel out of the cage and, like, pet it?
No. Because they were so traumatized, I can stick my head in the cage and they come right up to me and they'll talk to me, but they will not go on my finger because...
Is there a picture of you doing that?
Pardon me?
Is there a picture of you with your head in the cage talking to the cockatiel? It'd just be interesting to see.
I know. My grandkids get the biggest kick out of it, but they're wonderful. And then my son... And daughter-in-law have a dog, and my daughter and son-in-law have a dog that I babysit all the time. So it's a full
house. If you have a grand dog, you know, that's probably about the right amount of dog.
And Diane, remind me, the cockatiel is white with kind of the head feathers, right? Is that the one?
No, the cockatiels are about the size of a robin.
Okay.
They're typically gray, and they have the orange cheeks and the little plume feathers. So they're small. They're not
the
big ones.
Okay. Oh, I'm thinking of a...
Yeah.
Cockatoo, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, they're called cockatoos.
But they talk. Your birds talk.
They whistle and they make sounds and they chirp and they have all kinds of wonderful little behaviors. So they're fun. They're a lot of fun, but very, very messy.
Yeah.
How are they messy? Do they eat up like the newspaper in the bottom of the...
They just throw feathers, right?
They molt, but... Uh-huh. They have a special feeding thing because they throw their food all over the place, and they poop every 15 minutes. So
savages!
And I get so much joy from them.
And bless their hearts. Right. Thanks, Diane.
Bye-bye.
You're
we
welcome.
Will be back.
Bye-bye.
Our number is 312-981-7200. Amy Guth and Judy Markey. This is the Kathy and Judy Show. Amy Guth has been here all morning putting in good energy. And I do love getting to know you.
I enjoy getting to know you.
You had to say that.
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I meant it.
What are you doing on your show?
Well, we are talking with Lisa Dietlin from the Institute of Transformational Philanthropy. She's a regular guest on the Business Lunch Show, and she's going to be talking about the marathon, as we know, is tomorrow, as we see streets being blocked off already and all the police, you know, barriers being put up around the city. But there's still lots of ways we can support the people that are running that we know, the people that are running for charity, things like that. So we're talking about that and the official charities of the marathon, how we can still support people, all that good stuff. I think it's important to go out there and cheer for them personally, but it's also important to raise money for
because
causes.
It's so very difficult to complete.
I've done it. I've done marathons before, and those last several miles, you don't even know what planet you're on. Like you, mm-hmm. It really means a lot when someone is cheering and saying you're almost there, just a mile to go. You know, I think last year there was a guy out there yelling something like "Only 1 mile till beer" or something, because usually you're handed a beer at the finish line. It's like a Michelob Ultra or something, but it's a beer nonetheless. But I try to pick a place. I go to the end of the course. If I'm not running it, I'll find a place where there's no one else cheering, because everybody's at the end. Everybody's cheering at the finish line. Somewhere in that like 22-mile mark on South Michigan, there's not a lot of people out there. I'll go out there and just be the one crazy person just yelling by myself, going like, "You in the orange, you're doing it. You're almost there. You
now,
in yellow."
If it starts, it probably starts at 7, right?
Yeah.
It's okay. Early. So when would somebody show up? Not like, you know, the people who are the professional
the superhumans.
Runners. Right, the superhumans.
Yeah,
but when would packs of people start showing up? Mile 23.
You know, the superhumans get through about two and a half hours. So, you know, about 3 hours, it's a pretty good. So about 10 a.m., you're going to start seeing people starting to get to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like 3.5, that's a really good marathon time. So, you know, 3.5, 4. A lot of people come through after the 4-hour, 5-hour mark. A lot of people are in at that one. I try to stay at the end. I love that people at the end, because they're just like, damn it, I'm going to do this. I'm doing this. I've, you know, you see people like with on crutches. You see, I've done that. I've done Chicago on crutches before, because I got
the whole 26 miles.
Yes, I got hurt right before it, and I was like, oh no, I'm not going to not do this. I've worked too hard to not do this. I'm doing it. And I was one of the last ones. And so I really feel compassionate for people that are like, I don't want to, you know, sometimes you have to throw in the towel if you're injured,
sure,
or something. But some people are like, I'm doing it. And I think 2 years ago, maybe, there was a woman who, I think her it was her birthday, and she said, like, cheer for me, it's my 91st birthday or something like that.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Good on you. Good job.
Yeah.
You
definitely
go, girl.
Oops. That's the 12 o'clock midnight call.
We're turning into pumpkins. Well, let's change shifts, shall we, and switch to the business lunch. Thank you for the morning. Always a pleasure. So fun. And thanks to esteemed producer Kristen Decker.
And to Bob and to Veronica and to Sam.
I think he's still up there. Yeah.